Well, good morning. Welcome again to the live webcast from Tree of Life Christian Church. Glad to have you with us, and welcome especially to our other two home church fellowships this morning. Why don't you join me in the book of Romans, chapter 12 again, and we'll continue our study through the gifts of the Spirit. While you're turning there, just wanted to share for those who haven't heard yet that we did have our outreach car wash yesterday at the corner of Lassen and Topanga, and that went off very well. We were concerned leading up to the car wash because there were some weather reports that there were going to be winds up to 30 miles an hour, and that's not exactly conducive to car washing. And also, we had prepared for the car wash by ordering a special banner for the church and ordering T-shirts for the car washers to wear and ordering some special postcards that we were going to hand out that had information about the church, and all of those things didn't show up in time. And with the combination of the winds and the things that we had ordered not showing up, we seriously considered postponing the car wash. But Brian, who led the outreach, prayed and really believed that the Lord was showing him that these difficulties were hindrances or barriers in a sense of doing spiritual warfare, and he made the difficult but wise decision to press forward, and we went ahead and had the car wash, and the winds, I don't think, got above about 10 miles an hour, which was a big difference from 30 mile an hour winds, and the weather was just perfect, nice sunny day. We had lots of business. Everything went really smoothly. The actual washing was very well organized, and we had a lot of good, friendly people come through. And Brian had told me when we had first talked about doing the outreach that he'd hoped to maybe raise somewhere in the vicinity of $1,000. The money we raised, of course, was going to orphans both in Guatemala and in India with our connection to Little Lights Orphanage. And we raised just under $1,500. So it was a tremendous blessing. And everybody that participated, I think, had a good time. It was hard work, but it was really, really a rich and full time. And thanks again to everybody that did show up and work so hard, not for ourselves, but for those orphans in those two locations. I know their Christmas is going to be blessed as they receive those gifts from us. All right, well, if you would join me in Romans chapter 12, we're going to read again verses 6 through 8, and then I'll briefly catch us up to where we've been. Starting in Romans chapter 12, I'm going to be reading again for the first week in the English Standard Version as we're changing our church Bible translation. So you'll see in a couple of the verses here, you'll see some minor differences from the New American Standard text that you may still have. Romans chapter 12, verse 6. Having gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let us use them. If prophecy, in proportion to our faith. If service, in our serving. The one who teaches, in his teaching. The one who exhorts, in his exhortation. The one who contributes, in generosity. The one who leads, with zeal. The one who does acts of mercy, with cheerfulness. Now, we're finishing up our study through the gifts of the Spirit. I say finishing, we're not done today. But we're finishing up this particular section. We've come to the end of the last of the gifts that are addressed in this particular section. Remember, I've saved three gifts that we haven't addressed yet. We're going to go back in the weeks to come. We're going to go back to 1 Corinthians 12 for the gift of prophecy, the gift of speaking in tongues, and the gift of interpretation of tongues. I wanted to save some extra time for those three gifts that have a little bit more controversy connected to them, and I want to go into a little bit more detail for those. But last time in our gift study, I'd intended to do both the leadership gift and the gift of showing of mercy. We didn't get to this gift, showing of mercy, so we're going to cover that one gift today, and that actually leaves me a little bit of extra time to spend a little bit more detail attention on this particular gift. And it's a gift that, it's one of those gifts, the gift of showing of mercy, that typically gets kind of left out in our consideration of the gifts of the Spirit, because it's certainly not as spectacular as some of the other gifts. So I'm actually pleased that I'm going to be covering this one with a single focus rather than sharing the spotlight with the other gifts, because I think it's a gift that deserves a little bit more of our attention. Remember, in our gift study, what we're doing is we're not just studying through the gifts of the Spirit in order to gain some interesting and fascinating information about the spiritual activities of the Holy Spirit in our lives. What we're doing is we're recognizing as an overall theme that God has identified His church as a royal priesthood. And the identification of a royal priesthood means that every single born-again believer, everyone that's that the Lord identifies or describes as a true member of His church, is identified by Him as a priest. And what did the priests do? What was the job of the priests in the Old Testament now we're talking about? They ministered to the Lord. They served in His temple. Their life, the priests were different than anyone else in Israel. Their life was set apart 100% to serve the Lord. And we, as believers in the new covenant, are identified as members of a royal priesthood. And as a result, our lives are to be dedicated to His service. Well, the concept of the gifts of the Spirit is that God has given each one of those priests in His royal priesthood an assignment for their life, an assignment of service. You have, if you belong to the Lord, a specific work to do in His service. And your work of service is not exactly the work that I've been called to do. We've each been given a part to play in the kingdom of God, in the big picture of all that God is wanting to accomplish in history. And for each one of our assignments, it's just not a matter of, okay, well, let's just muster up all of our best intentions and all of our best efforts and all of our best energy, and let's try to do a good job for the Lord based upon some idea that I have that the Lord would want to have done. It's not like that. The idea is once we discern what our assignment is, we're to focus in on what He's given us to do and recognize that He's also given us grace to accomplish our assignment. And that grace is the gifts of the Spirit, meaning He's given you an assignment, but He's also given you the tools necessary to accomplish your assignment. For instance, my assignment is as a teacher of His Word. It's critically important that I have grace from God to teach. It would be horrible for me to stand up here, let alone for you. It would be horrible for me to stand up here and open the book and just kind of, you know, rummage through the Bible and try to put some words together that meant something to you week after week if I didn't have the grace from God necessary to accomplish that assignment. But this is true for all of our assignments, for all of the gifts. And so as we're working through that, we've come to this idea of, or this gift of the showing of mercy. Now the wording in the English Standard Version is slightly different than the New American Standard. New American Standard calls it showing mercy. In the English Standard Version, it says it this way: the one who does acts of mercy. And I actually like the distinction here because it emphasizes not just feelings of mercy, it emphasizes acts of mercy. This particular grace does originate, it starts with certain feelings of mercy and compassion toward other people, but it has to be expressed in tangible, real acts that affect and influence the lives of the people that are being shown this mercy. Now, with each one of these, I've told you I'm giving you a working definition of the gift so that we have a starting point for understanding what this gift is all about. These definitions, again, are my definitions. Here's my definition for the mercy-showing gift. It's the grace to compassionately respond to a person, a family, a group, or a church in real need with the right action that represents to them the mercy and compassion of the Lord. Let me read that definition again. The grace to compassionately respond to a person, family, group, or church in real need with the right action that represents to them the mercy and the compassion of the Lord. Now, one of the details in the way that Paul describes this mercy-showing gift in Romans 12 is there's a secondary tagline that describes how this gift is to be expressed, and it really refers to what is supposed to be going on in the heart of the person that's exercising this gift. And we see this in verse 8 where he says, the one who does acts of mercy with cheerfulness. Now, why is cheerfulness necessary for showing acts of mercy? The idea here of cheerfulness, by the way, is not just, when you're doing an act of mercy, put on a happy face and, you know, show them your pearly whites and, you know, just kind of put on the front of you're enjoying what you're doing. Cheerfulness is really something a little bit deeper. It means the original word in the Greek language means joyful happiness. So the one who shows mercy, the one who does these acts of mercy that God has designed to impact and influence the lives of those who so much need compassion and mercy to be shown to them, is that it's critically important for the one who's doing that act of mercy to be holding in their heart joyful happiness as they're doing it. And the reason is the particular focal point of this gift is aimed at people that are in serious, desperate need in their lives. Some special circumstances are usually involved in the showing of mercy gift. Now, I'm going to give you some biblical examples for these. In fact, what I've done for each gift is I've given you a Bible example and I've tried to give you a real-life, our experience church example for each one. And I had an idea, and since I had extra time, I was able to develop some new things. And with this idea, I wish I had done this for each one of the gifts. And retroactively in my notes, I'm going to do this, but I didn't think of it in time. I want to give you an example from Christ's own life and ministry for each one of these gifts as we go forward anyway. So let's look first at the example that he sets for us in Matthew chapter 8. The reason I want to give an example from Christ's life and ministry for each gift is this. I've said before, and this is a key concept to remember in your study of the gifts of the Spirit, that the gifts, every single gift of the Spirit that's listed in these four gift lists that we've been studying in the New Testament, every single gift is an expression of some aspect of the nature or character of Christ himself. In other words, when we have grace that we call a spiritual gift in a particular area, you are representing Christ in that circumstance. And so in Matthew chapter 8, I'll read the first three verses. I'm going to give you a couple of three examples, actually, of Christ showing mercy or doing acts of mercy. And this is going to give us some practical examples of how this gift is to be shown to the community around us. Acts 8, verse 1, or excuse me, did I say Acts?
No.
Matthew. Okay, Matthew 8, verse 1. When he came down from the mountain, great crowds followed him, and behold, a leper came to him and knelt before him, saying, Lord, if you will, you can make me clean. And Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, I will be clean. And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. Now, Jesus showed mercy to this man in this special circumstance. What was the special circumstance that's involved in this case? Leprosy. That's a very special circumstance. In fact, while the text here doesn't go into a lot of details about it, we need to understand just how special this moment was. The context is Jesus was up on a mountain. He comes down from the mountain and there's great crowds following him. Great crowds meaning not that the people are great, but that there's a large number of people that are with him. And behold, a leper came to him. And the crowds haven't gone away, so the leper comes to him with the great crowds surrounding him. What's the special circumstance right there? It was against the law of Moses. It was against the law of God for that leper to even be in that crowd. Lepers in those days were commanded by law to keep themselves separate from the crowd because it was considered to be a ceremonially contagious disease, meaning even though it wasn't physically contagious by contact, it was ceremonially contagious. Anyone that made physical contact with a leper was considered to be unclean and could not enter the precincts of the temple of God. And so this leper takes this huge risk because he's actually breaking the law to get close to Jesus. And when he does, what does Jesus do? Does Jesus say, hey, wait a second, you're breaking the law? And of course, Jesus knows that the leper is breaking the law. Jesus is the one that gave the law of God. He knows the law, and he knows the law is being broken. And so what does he do in this circumstance? He shows him mercy rather than judgment in this situation. And how does he show it to him? In a very powerful, tangible, and practical way. He does what? I heard too many answers, sorry. That's good, but I couldn't discern any one answer. Yes? He stretched out his hand and he touched him. This was the last thing anyone would do with a leper, is actually reach out and make physical contact. Anyone that even was feeling compassion toward lepers might hand them something warm to, you know, like a garment in wintertime, or bring them some food to provide for them, because typically lepers could not go out and earn their own living. But to actually reach out and make physical contact was an amazing act of mercy in this circumstance. And of course, Jesus went even beyond that and healed and restored the man's physical condition. But we see this special circumstance and this special expression of God's mercy. Let's look at another one in chapter 9 of the same Gospel of Matthew, chapter 9. We'll read starting in verse 35. And Jesus went throughout all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues, and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom, and healing every disease and every affliction. When he saw the crowds, and this is where the mercy-showing gift goes into operation from our perspective. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them, because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest." All right, Jesus sees a crowd. And in seeing this crowd, his heart is moved with God's compassion toward the crowd. And when God's compassion moves a person's heart, it is never enough to just feel sorry for the people that you were feeling compassion toward. The feeling sorry for them is the beginning of an expression of godly compassion, but it's not the completion in and of itself. It's not enough to just look, oh, you know, that's so sad, that's so bad, I feel so bad for those people, and then to just leave it there. If it dies there, it's not a true showing of mercy. And so Jesus feels compassion toward the crowd, but what does he do with that feeling of compassion? In this particular case, it's an unusual expression, one that we might not expect, but it's a true expression of showing of mercy. He immediately directs his disciples to pray, into focused intercession. He doesn't just say generally, these people are in bad shape, pray for them. He gives them a specific prayer target. He says, these people need leadership. They need shepherding. They're desperately in need, like sheep that are in need without a shepherd. And if you've ever seen sheep out in a field, they always have a shepherd with them, because sheep without a shepherd are vulnerable and weak and stupid. And they will always choose the wrong thing unless they have proper leadership. That's just the nature of sheep. That's the way they are. And, you know, the Lord chooses sheep to speak to us about ourselves as in our relationship to him. And so he sees the crowd and he sees them kind of meandering, lost and without any direction. And he directs his disciples, begin to intercede and begin to pray in a focused way for them. Pray for leadership. Pray for the Lord to bring or to send laborers out into this harvest of people, to organize them and to draw them into the right kind of relationship and walk with the Lord that they should have. So prayer is a very appropriate expression of the showing of mercy. But it can't be just this general kind of prayer, but a focused, specific, really get to the heart of meeting the true need of the people kind of prayer. Let's look at a third one in Matthew 15. These are three examples of Jesus showing mercy the compassion of God in action. Chapter 15, I'll read from verse 29. Jesus went up from there and walked beside the Sea of Galilee, and he went up on the mountain and sat down there, and great crowds came to him, bringing with them the lame, the blind, the crippled, the mute, and many others. And they put them at his feet, and he healed them. So that the crowd wondered when they saw the mute speaking, the crippled healthy, the lame walking, and the blind seeing, and they glorified the God of Israel. Jesus then called his disciples to him and said, I have compassion on the crowd, because they have been with me now 3 days and have nothing to eat. And I am unwilling to send them away hungry, lest they faint on the way. And the disciples said to him, where are we to get enough bread in such a desolate place to feed so great a crowd? Jesus said to them, how many loaves do you have? They said, 7 and a few small fish. And directing the crowd to sit down on the ground, he took the 7 loaves and the fish. And having given thanks, he broke them and gave them to the disciples. And the disciples gave them to the crowd. And they all ate and were satisfied. And they took up 7 baskets full of the broken pieces left over. All right, this is an expression of what we would call the mercy-showing gift from the life of the Lord Jesus. And what's interesting is he had just ministered to the crowd and had done so for 3 days, healing all manner of afflictions and diseases and physical problems among the people that were in the crowd. And that in itself is an awesome expression of God's mercy and compassion. He had done so much for them. I mean, literally transformed lives that were broken and were hurting. And then at the end of that ministry for 3 days, he has a further, very simple and practical movement of God's compassion toward the crowd. And that was for what? They were hungry. They'd been with him. These people had left their towns and their villages and had gone out where Jesus was in a wilderness place. And they were with him for 3 days, and they probably brought some food to eat with them at the beginning, but it had been gone by now. And yet, because he was doing such awesome and amazing things and was transforming their lives in such powerful ways, they didn't want to leave and go back and get food. And it wasn't just like there was a market or a Burger King down the road that they could just stop at. You know, they're out in the wilderness with Jesus, and he has compassion on them. He's busied himself with the high-level things of the kingdom and healing and transforming their lives, but he hasn't forgotten their real, practical, physical needs. And as he is concerned with that, he moves with compassion to do what? Not just feel sorry. Man, it's too bad that these folks don't have anything to eat. He doesn't just feel sorry for them. He does what? He feeds them. Now, you and I are not in a position, you know, unless the Lord moves in an amazing way, but this is not going to be our normal experience, that if we have a similar movement of compassion in our hearts, you know, we're not going to be able to do a miracle to create bread out of nothing. But the idea here is that true showing of mercy actually fed the people. He moved in order to meet the actual practical need of the people involved. All right, now I said I'd show you some Bible examples beyond the life of Jesus himself. Let me give you a couple of those that are very familiar to us. Luke chapter 10. These are examples not from real life circumstances, but these are examples of showing mercy from 2 parables that the Lord told. 2 stories he told that are designed by the Lord to cause us to grow in the ability to show mercy to those that God brings across our path. First, Luke chapter 10, verse 30, famous story of the Good Samaritan. A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was. When he saw him, he had compassion. He went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he set him on his own animal and brought him to an inn and took care of him. The next day, he took out 2 denarii, which is no small amount of money in those days, and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, take care of him. And this is to me the uttermost extent of a true mercy-showing gift. He said to the innkeeper, take care of him, and whatever more you spend, I will repay when I come back. In other words, he doesn't set a limit. He just says to him, whatever the man needs to meet his actual need, if this 2 denarii doesn't cover the expense, please go ahead and meet his need, and if I owe you more, I will come back and repay it. He doesn't say, you know, you'll be able to get the money from the man eventually. He makes it his own obligation for this stranger that he has never actually met, because the man is apparently unconscious. He's half dead. That's the concept here. So he's done all of this to a man that he doesn't even know the man's name, doesn't know anything about the man. He has no connection to the man. He has no relationship to the man. He's simply moved by the Spirit of God with the compassion and mercy of God toward this man in real need. And he meets his real need. And he goes to incredible extent to do so. He first ministers to his wounds as he finds him on the roadside. He takes him and puts him on his own animal, meaning he got off of his animal and doesn't ride all the way back to the inn. He walks back to the inn, leading the man as he's on his own animal, and then brings him to the innkeeper. And it says he takes care of him there. So he stayed for a while, and he cared for his wounds while he was there at the inn. And then when he finally had to leave, he pulls real money out of his own, you know, out of his own purse and his own wallet, and he blesses the innkeeper and says, take care of this man. And so Jesus says, which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers? And I think it's interesting. He doesn't just say which of these three showed mercy or which of these three had compassion, which is the core of our study. But the point is, this is not supposed to be something that's just such an amazingly unusual response. You know, the idea is Jesus is referencing one of the core laws of the Old Testament law, which is you shall love your neighbor as you love yourself. And the showing of mercy to those who are in special need is an expression of true neighbor love. And so they answer and say, the one who showed him mercy. And Jesus said to him, you just be glad that you don't have to do the same thing yourself, right? Jesus said to him, you go and do likewise. The idea is that yes, and this is true for all of the gifts of the Spirit, these gifts are present in the body in such a way that there will be some among us who excel in the showing of mercy because they've been given an extra measure of grace from God to be moved with compassion and a desire and an ability and a strength and a commitment to show real mercy when it's needed, when they encounter special circumstances. But they have that gift to teach all of the rest of us that we're to be more inclined to be showers of mercy and represent the Lord in that way. All right, let's look at another example. This one is, again, another famous parable. Luke 15. We'll read from verse 11, the parable of what is traditionally called the prodigal son. I'm going to describe the focus of the point that I want to make from this parable as this part is the parable of the prodigal father. Not the prodigal's father, the prodigal father. If you look up the word prodigal in the dictionary, it literally means an extravagant expenditure. an extravagant expenditure. The prodigal son is called the prodigal because he took the inheritance that his father gave him and extravagantly wasted it. But the father is going to show him extravagant prodigal mercy. There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the share of property that is coming to me." And he divided his property between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had, took a journey into a far country, and there he squandered his property in reckless living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into the fields to feed pigs. He was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, but I perish here with hunger? I will arise, go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants.' And he arose and came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Bring quickly the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate." What is the extravagant showing of mercy by the father? It was in the expression of welcoming his son back. And of course, he was able to welcome him back because there had been a change in his son's heart, a true repentance. But the father, once he saw that evidence of repentance, and even before he saw the evidence, he was already running to meet him. He knew that just the returning back to the home, before he even heard the words that the son had rehearsed to himself, just seeing him return to his home was, for him, the proof that God had begun to change his son's heart. And he ran and embraced him, and he kissed him, and he welcomed him, and he clothed him with all of the blessing of his household, and he restored him to his full position in the household, even though the son didn't deserve to be restored in that way. And so we see here this restoration and full and heartfelt forgiveness is an awesome expression for this son of the mercy of God, a true showing of mercy. All right, let's talk for a moment about an example from our church. I wanted to give you an example in each case of that. And, you know, I don't do this, of course, to make anyone feel uncomfortable or embarrassed or anything like that. But I think it's helpful for us to see practical and tangible examples among us. And it gives us an understanding of how the Lord is wanting to teach each one of us through the real life examples of how he's working in each other's lives. The example I thought of in this case, and I thought of more than one example, more than one person, but I wanted to give the example of Jacob Hammersley. Jacob is a young man who he's not the kind of young man that will stand in front of the church very often. He won't call attention to himself very often. And yet you see him when he is serving the Lord, you see him choosing avenues of service that are expressions of mercy and compassion. You know that Tim and Maria Cunahan recently left the church and left a huge gap in our transportation ministry for the special needs that Moshe and Lilia Grill have. Moshe is confined to his wheelchair, and Tim, you know, had brought Jacob under his wing, and Jacob had been helping Tim for a number of months, might even be a number of years before this. But as soon as Tim left, you know, for Jacob, I didn't have to go to Jacob and ask Jacob, would you consider taking the lead in this? It was in Jacob's heart already to just step into the into the breach, you know, step into that gap and to fill that gap. And he didn't do so just because it was a chore to do. He did so out of concern, out of compassion, out of a desire to show the mercy of God to Moshe and to Lilia. And he does it with a good attitude. He's always smiling in that. It's not an easy thing to do what he does when he transports them. Another example of this gift in his life, he was just sharing in our home church fellowship this morning that he and a group of friends are going to be going down to the Los Angeles area for the holiday season, and they're going to be handing out blankets and sharing the gospel and praying for people that are in real circumstances of serious need. That's an expression of the showing of mercy. And when we see things like that, we're not meant to say, oh, I'm so glad I don't have to transport Moshe, right? And we're not supposed to say, oh, I'm so glad I don't have to go down there and hand out blankets. We're meant to learn from the example and to ask the Lord, Lord, how do you want to cause me to grow in this same way? I may not transport Moshe. I may not hand out blankets in the same situation that Jacob does, but I'm meant to learn from that and grow from that, and the Lord will show me ways that he wants me to follow that example. Well, God bless you this morning. Thank you very much for joining us on the webcast, and we'll end our study here today. Lord willing, we'll pick up next time with a study in the gift of prophecy. But for next Sunday morning, remember, it's our all-church gathering. There will be no webcast next Sunday morning, and we'll pick up the week after that, as I say, Lord willing, and we'll continue our study through the gifts.